Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and with me, as he always is Dom. Dom, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, apart from stumbling through introductions. We are back today to talk about episode 12 of Survivor Karen Mullen. The end is near. Last week, we lost Malcolm. We spent quite a while talking about that last week. We did over 3 hours talking about the last three episodes. If you missed that, I highly recommend checking that out. And if you're not already subscribed on iTunes, definitely do so to make sure you get that episode and all of our future episodes. And this week, I think, fortunately, this one's not going to take quite as long.
Right. Just a few scheduling matters quickly. The end has already come a bit around Canada. I don't think anyone could have anticipated a few days ago. So we're going to be talking about that sometime next week, I think next Thursday, and hope to get that for you before the Survivor finale, which we're also going to be talking about pretty much as soon as it's over, and we hope to get that up for you probably the Monday after that happens. We'll see about that, though. But in any case, we hope to talk to at least some of the people from the season and schedule a few other interviews as well. We're probably going to have to push that back a little bit towards maybe the middle of June or so, because we've got a lot of stuff going on in real life we need to focus on. But we hope to make up for lost time after that.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, just very quickly on Big Brother Canada, like Dom said, we are going to be doing a full podcast about this. But he's not lying when he said this is an absolutely nuts finale. And just a quick spoiler alert / mini synopsis, the way it went down, the final vote between the two finalists went 4-3 in favor of one person because one of the jurors messed up their vote. They meant to vote for their best friend throughout the entire game, put in the wrong key card, and as a result, the other person got the win. So we're going to definitely have a lot to say about that and the entire season. Dom, anything else? Go ahead.
Even if you haven't watched a single episode of Big Brother Canada this season, go on YouTube and find a video of that ending, because it's unprecedented. It's something you really want to watch. I'm actually kind of surprised that something like this hasn't happened before, because across, 40 seasons or so of Survivor and Big Brother combined, and obviously many more when you could take into account the international versions. I'm surprised we haven't seen not only somebody not affect the outcome of the game by fumbling their vote, but just not fumbling their vote whatsoever, with obviously the arguable exception of Christy.
Right, yeah, I think it's just because Survivor and Big Brother are now, you know, it's season 26 and season 14, where people are familiar enough with the format. But this is, again, the first season of Big Brother Canada. At the same time, it seems like the rules are pretty clear, and obviously that's the ruling that they made is your vote counts. But it's crazy that not only did it happen, but it swung the result from one person to the other.
Yeah, even Tara knew what she was doing. Emmett was able to follow instructions better than Topaz was. So I admit, although if you had to bet on one person before the finale to fuck it up the way that she did, I think Tara would be at the top of the list, but Topaz wouldn't be that far behind.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, Tara, I think, has to be one with the bullet. Impressive stuff, by maybe the most impressive thing she did all season, getting her vote right. Yeah, all right, so let's get into some Survivor. That was your weekly Big Brother mini-cast. We have 8 people left now in this Survivor. It's the double boot, episode 12, as I mentioned, and basically it's Eddie and Reynolds against the 6 remaining Stealth-RS members, and we get the obligatory shot of them high-fiving about the fact that they're on the bottom after they return from Tribal Council, where they just lost Malcolm.
Right, first impressions coming into this episode were that we knew that we were going to be having a double boot episode for a long time, and we knew since about this time last week that it was going to be this episode. And so I wasn't really sure what I wanted to happen, because obviously as viewers, we want to see things get shaken out constantly. We want to see big, like, quote-unquote big moves or whatever be pulled off. But at the same time, if that's going to happen, I want something as important as that to have its own episode devoted to it. I don't want it to be rushed through and compacted into 20 minutes.
Right, we were just actually talking off air about how it's kind of a tragedy that Andrea's blindside episode didn't get an entire hour.
Right, whereas next week, for instance, we have to assume that it's probably going to be someone like Eddie or Brenda or Eric going, and that's going to have a full 45 minutes devoted to it. Whereas you have this episode where one of the big power players of the season is going home with an idol in their pocket after having been betrayed by closest allies. You'd expect that episode to have a proper level of exposition. You don't have the first half of it devoted to, well, it's essentially a formality with Reynolds going home. Like, I think everyone both in the game and everyone watching the game pretty much knew that he was dead to rights, and we really just wanted him out of the way so we could get to the meat of the episode. And, you know, if this episode had just been Reynolds going in the first half and Eddie going in the second half or whatever, the episode itself probably wouldn't have been very good, but it would have been an acceptable necessity to get to the real good points of the season.
Right. The only issue is, each of the post-merge episodes have been pretty interesting, very interesting to this point. And when you have the family visit coming at Final Six and have to have presumably that reward challenge and everything, I don't know what other situation you would have worked together into two booths, but again, it's just, I wish we had 15 episodes a season, I guess.
Sure. I know he's supposed to be the golden boy and the darling of the franchise, but Malcolm's boot was pretty much predetermined as well. If you had Malcolm's boot and Reynolds' boot in the same episode, and then had the final seven be like the proper official start of the endgame, I think that would have worked a lot better. Maybe it would have been hard logistically, because you have to show the auction and everything as well, and the fallout from that, but I think that would have been a much better setup.
That's definitely true, although I feel like if Malcolm's the one who's leaving in the first half of the episode, most of the Survivor viewing audience isn't really going to care when Reynold leaves in the second half. Like 20 minutes into the episode, all Twitter's going to be talking about is, oh my God, I already miss Malcolm. I don't care what else happens. So let's get into this because I think it's worth restating. Last week, for people who didn't listen, Dom and I both are basically convinced that there's no other outcome other than Cochran winning this season. And I think that was definitely reaffirmed to me yet again in this. He had a confessional in the opening montage about how he's there to play and he understands that he may have to make some cutthroat moves, but it's okay with him and he wants the power and he's willing to do anything and his mom's not going to be proud. And I got to say, I'm loving this from Cochran, and I know I've been impressed with him this whole season, but this might have been the thing that impressed me the most. I think that is such a critical mentality.
Are you impressed with it because it just starts to stark contrast from how he was before, or is it that you feel like this is like some objectively impressive thing for him to be saying?
Well, I think it is an objectively impressive mentality to have and an impressive thing to be saying for him, but it's certainly magnified by the fact that, yeah, it is kind of out of character from what I would expect from Cochran, but this is exactly what I was hoping to see. I didn't think I would see it, but I'm thrilled that I did.
I feel like this is the same kind of generic confessional that you could have got from Andrea or, you know, Dawn, even now that she's wrestling with this question of whether or not she's well suited to play the game properly, or Sherry even. Like, this is the kind of thing that everyone is thinking and saying. It just so happens that because Cochran presumably goes on to win, and because he's able to set it so articulately, it's obviously a stark contrast to us, that he's the one who gets the airtime in that case.
Well, funny you mentioned Dawn, because she had a secret scene this week about how things might get shaken up at Final Seven. I think it was even during the round of eight still, where the talking about once Reynolds gone, you know, Andrea could be, I wish I could remember her phrasing where it's like, Andrea, like that deal could change this next coming round. And I think Dawn, more so than even Cochran this season, has gone out of her way to remind herself constantly that it's just a game. And I think it's working very well for both of them, and it's paying huge dividends.
I don't doubt that your reaction to Cochran's confessional was sincere, and it's obviously the reaction that they want you to have, they being the producers. But at the same time, it makes you wonder, just right at the point I was making just now, what this person and what other people would be saying if the conclusion of the scenes ended up being different. So take last season as an example. If Scoobin went on to win, and you know, we can infer based on interviews and stuff that probably wasn't even possible, but supposedly he had, that stretch of invisibility that he had for pretty much the first half of the season would have been completely flipped on his head. He would have been one of the defining characters, and his role post-match as the perpetual swing vote would have been knocked into our heads over and over again to the point of being insufferable. So, you know, we obviously it's great that we're seeing this, but like the fact that we are seeing this at all is a really important thing here, I think.
Oh yeah, I feel like there have been a lot of winners historically where they paint them in their most positive light, and it's still not that impressive to me because they don't, like, I feel like their priorities aren't there, and with Cochran, I feel like it's all there.
Well, I feel like this constant overemphasis on things which aren't particularly significant or impressive is one of the reasons that a lot of people have become responding negatively to his edit recently. Like, Jeff Probst thing about how Cochran's this challenge piece is going on this marvelous, this incredible tear. Like, that's just, firstly, it's annoying if it were true, and secondly, it just isn't true. It's not congruent with reality.
Oh, right, yeah, like at this the second immunity challenge, I think it was, when he was getting the necklace back from Cochran, and he's like, oh my God, not wearing a shirt, winning immunity challenges, this kid yeah. 2 years ago. Like, we get it, Jeff.
Yeah, and at the first one, he's saying, oh, this complete transformation, like, Reynolds got to get through Cochran, who's been on a roll. Like, you can understand when it's some like cute ironic comment that Jeff's just saying to poke fun at somebody, but when it becomes Jeff just clearly giving preference to his favorites over and over again in this way, like, you can understand the backlash against that.
Oh, definitely. And I certainly think Cochran, some of the backlash he may be receiving is because of this, like, overwhelmingly positive, and not just because he is the only one getting it. I feel like people are somewhat frustrated by the season and take that out on him.
Yeah, like, we're both rooting for Cochran this season, as we've made clear many times. But because we're rooting for him, we want to see what he's actually like out there. We don't want our intelligence as viewers to be insulted by this kind of sanitized edit, which is meant to make us think a certain way.
All right, well, I guess it worked on me because I was extraordinarily impressed. But yeah, okay. Let's get on to the personal immunity challenge. And this round is going to be pretty easy. It seems like it's Reynolds or bust.
You're not going to let that die, are you?
Oh, I'm not.
If you're still doing this for Survivor 34, you're also going to be personal immunity over and over again, every single episode.
I know we lost Reynolds this week. I will never lose personal immunity. That, after 26 seasons, that is one of very few things. I love that. I don't know what it is about it. I just can't get enough of it.
You think he bestowed a timeless legacy to the franchise, do you?
Well, I feel like it's like an indicator of he's not that familiar with the show, but he really wants to be out, because no one who's familiar with it would ever call it personal immunity. Because for 13 years, it's been individual immunity.
Well, that's what it is. It's personal immunity. Like, even Jeff Post makes these mistakes. Like, he's saying, Reynolds saved himself by winning the hidden immunity, by winning the immunity idol or something. It's not an idol, it's a fucking necklace. But, you know, this kind of terminology gets thrown around all the time, and, like, nobody pays attention to it.
I guess it's just because I've never heard anyone call it that, and he calls it that every single episode, over and over and over again. I love it. I can't even explain it. It's one of my favorite, it's my favorite thing. It's intangibles.
Yeah, I feel like it is, to use one of Stephen Fishback's new favorite words, metonymic of Reynolds' entire, like, presence in the season, where he doesn't really know what he's doing, but he just has this happy-go-lucky attitude, and he's really excited to be there. He just, like, the idea of not saying and doing exactly what he wants to say and do just doesn't ever occur to him. Like, we see this the scene of them arriving back from tribal council, where it's like Reynolds just goes up to people and says, "I think I can win 5 immunities in a row." Like, firstly, that's clearly not a realistic thing to expect. Even if it is, why don't you just go out and say that? Like, it doesn't help people's perception of you. And thirdly, it's not like they're unaware of this. It's, you know, Eric's not sitting in the corner, like, being awestruck by this new revelation that Reynolds is good at challenges. It's like, why go out and put that on the table? Like, maybe it's the kind of thing that we've seen, I think, most famously with Ozzy after Elise was voted out, where it's like, I know that I'm in a bad situation now, so I don't have to be subtle or anything, and this is my way of protesting, given that I have no power in the game.
Right, it's kind of like every round we see them come back, like we talked about, where they come back and they fist bump and they're glad that they're on the bottom, because no one, like, people can lie to them. There's no point. They can't really betray anyone. They got a ton of room to maneuver. And it just seemed like another one of those things where Reynolds clearly doesn't really know what he's doing, but seemed really enthusiastic about the, like, I think he said that as, of course, when you say, "Hey, I think I'm capable of winning 5 personal immunity challenges," people are probably going to want to vote you out when you're on the outside of their alliance. But for Reynolds, I feel like that was totally in line. I don't know. Like, obviously, it's not good, but I think it's certainly story checked out, I guess, for Reynolds. So let's get into this immunity challenge, because obviously this is personal immunity or bust here, where Reynolds is going to be the and justifiably so. He's going to go if he doesn't win. And they're playing not only for immunity, but also for a clue to the newly hidden immunity idol. And this is also an endurance and balance challenge, where Jeff Probst is going to bring out temptations. And the first temptation was donuts. And Eddie, who is second in line, if Reynolds does win immunity, says, "You know what? I'd really like some donuts." And he just jumps down.
Sure. And particularly the reaction on Twitter and everyone else is like, "Oh my God, Eddie's such an idiot." Well, like, why? Like, that instinctive reaction to just dismiss him as an idiot without analyzing what he's saying is far stupider than anything Eddie has done or could have done.
Well, when you listen to his secret scene about why he did what he did, he's talking about, "Oh, all that matters is if Reynolds won it or not, and I wanted to get something out of it."
Well, that's true. That's completely true. So what's the flaw in his thought process there?
I mean, he's one fewer person that Reynolds has to beat in order for Eddie to be the boot instead.
Right, but, okay, firstly, if it's a heads-up contest against Reynolds, then obviously you never jump off. But even if, you know, Eddie would beat Reynolds and he jumps off, then he has to be better enough than Reynolds that he can also beat everyone else who would beat Reynolds as well, right? So Andrew and Brendan, everyone else. If you look around, clearly this is a challenge which favors short women with a certain body type, So you have people like that. You have Andrea. You have Brenda, whose job is to teach people to stand still on floating objects. Like, this isn't a challenge which she is going to be competitive in. So why put yourself through that at all? Like, if anything, this is going to help his ability to stay in the game, right? This perception of him as someone who can be easily manipulated to forfeit challenges, or someone who's just not willing to compete, this is a good thing to cultivate.
Definitely, but I probably, if I were Eddie, would try to wait until Reynolds was out of that challenge to go.
Right. Firstly, though, that might not be something he can wait for. Like, if he's out, you know, second or third, then Reynolds is still going to be there. And even if he waits until that point when there are four or so people left, then that doesn't change the fact that one of Andrew or Brenda is going to win the challenge. Like, they were able to stay up naturally for, what, two or three more hours after Reynolds fell off? And they could have gone on all day, it looked like.
Right, it's like Malcolm in that final immunity challenge in Philippines. He could have had 100 extra tries. Reynolds could have had 100 extra tries. He wasn't going to last another 4 hours with those girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is maybe an example of how this idea that somebody is an immunity threat maybe requires a bit more context, because obviously if all the challenges are like this on the season, then Reynolds isn't really an immunity threat anymore, right? He's good at certain things which require certain skill sets, but those aren't going to be required in every single challenge.
Right, and the entire idea of an immunity threat is not so this person is a favorite to bang off every single consecutive immunity challenge until we get there. It's this person is the most likely, and if we give them a free pass to keep, like, once they lose, if we give them another shot at this, that could have been their one that they would have lost, so you got to take them out when you can, and that's exactly what we see is the situation here with Reynolds. Yeah. So let's see. It comes down to Brenda and Andrea in the immunity challenge, and they both really want the necklace, apparently. You know, Andrea hasn't won one, Brenda has, and I'm guessing they also both probably want the clue. After several hours, they decide to make it harder on themselves, and I think it was total runtime around 4 hours. Brenda fell in, Andrea won immunity, and the clue to the hidden immunity idol, which I guess they decided to share, which is kind of stupid, but I get it.
Yeah, and Brenda wins a moral victory, you could say.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I guess the thing worth noting, actually, is when Reynolds falls off, predictably, everyone celebrates because they know that's the end of the round.
Yeah, like, we see this every season. Like, when Troy's Zine lost in the first round of his challenge after predicting that he's going to challenge haul his way to the end, like, you can see everyone just publicly celebrating and him just turning his back on everyone. And Reynolds, I think, just made more class than that. I mean, it's not difficult to display more class than Troy Zine did at any point, but, you know, I think he understood that it was immunity or bust for him, and at that point, I think he just knew there's nothing he could do, and he just wanted to enjoy the rest of his time out there.
Right, like in South Pacific, right after the merge, when Ozzy went out in the first round of that challenge where he was the lock boot without it, everyone was, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
All right. And
like, everyone else could afford to jump for food or anything else at that point because, like, nobody cared. Like, it was pretty clear what the outcome was going to be.
Yeah, and actually not the last time we're going to be talking about this challenge, because it seems like, at least according to what Andrea said in the episode, Brenda's performance in this challenge is the main reason why, after Reynolds was gone, she wanted to be blindsiding Brenda, which, of course, it didn't end up working out. But nonetheless, more to come on that, I guess. But first, let's talk about, because Andrea won this challenge, she got, as mentioned, the clue to the hidden immunity idol, same one Malcolm got, which is basically directions. And they decided to share it not only with Brenda, but with the entire Stealth R Us Alliance. They all went out and dug around the tree for a while, and Eric Reichenbach found it, and Andrea quickly just yanked it out of his hands.
Yeah, like, Malcolm and Andrea both spent hours digging there. Malcolm ends up with blisters on his hands, apparently. They make it so painful that he couldn't keep digging anymore. And Eric just, like, waltzes up there, and within 1 minute, just unearths the idol. So.
Yeah, well, I want to talk a little bit about this, because Steven was saying, and someone who I'm sure is familiar with the intricacies of idol rules would be Steven, is Andrea really just yanked it out of his hand without asking permission or anything, and maybe it was something we didn't see. Like, they all decided, hey, when someone finds it, it goes to Andrea or whatever. But this was, you know, Cochran had very rightly pointed out that not Eric's first time giving up immunity to a hot chick. This is, has he learned nothing?
Right, low-hanging fruit there.
Yeah.
According to the account that Andrea gave, Eric, she wasn't really paying attention. Obviously, she realized Eric found it, and Eric just pretty much thrust it into her hands. And I think, I can't remember if Eric said this is a secret seal or not, but I think he did. I believe Eric said that he just gave it to Andrea because he didn't want that target being put on his back where it could be put on somebody else's. So it seemed like this was just like a consensual arrangement on both ends, basically.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to steal an idol from someone, Eric's a good guy to do it from, because he may not know what happened, and even when he figures out what happens, he's probably not going to do anything about it.
Right. This question of theft doesn't really advise, I don't think, because it's clear that that's what happened. So if Eric changes his mind 2 hours later and decides he wants the idol back, he can't cause a fuss about that because he gave it away. It's his problem at that point.
Well, if she just yanks it and it's clear, if that is what happens, I feel like he could definitely, after a little while, go to production, if he knew the intricacies of the rules, go and say, I did not willingly give this to her. She just grabbed it. You can check the tape. I would like this back, however it needs to happen.
But it appeared that he handed it over to her, and that both of them were happy about that. And so if Eric goes to them a day later and says, I want the idol back, they're going to say, well, why are you unhappy about it now? Maybe something's changed then. If you had an objection to that, you should have raised it at the time when it actually happened.
That's fair. And again, it's Eric, where this is never just going to conceivably happen. But certainly, if it's me, don't even bother asking if you can take my idol.
I think this is a good point to segue into a wider discussion about Eric, though, because a lot of people have, I think, just because the season seems so predictable at this point, they're trying to concoct ways in which the result might be in question. And one of these theories is that Eric is playing this marginal under-the-radar game that has led not only the people out there, but also the rest of the audience, apparently, to underestimate. One of the obvious examples of this is him seemingly throwing challenges, because it's pretty clear from his performance at the Final Seven Challenge, which he won, the one where you had to go to this rope course and then build a ladder and get up it, that he is the same Eric that he was in Micronesia. His challenge prowess hasn't gone away at all. So maybe he just has been sandbagging it until this point. And if so, that seems to be a smart thing to do.
Well, I guess, I mean, one of them was the gross food. One of them was the one Cochran had an advantage on. One of them was this balance one that he could never win. And then the one that he did, in fact, win at Final Seven. So I don't know about throwing, although, of course, I would love it if he were throwing these challenges. But, it's possible, I guess. Now, as it pertains to the people looking for not only Eric, but reasons that other people can win, for instance, I know a lot of Brenda's getting a lot of support recently about how this could all drastically change, and one of these people who was so quiet for the first 10 episodes or so could suddenly come in and scoop this thing away. I don't think that has any legs at all. I think there is a 0% chance, literally, that they would ever edit Eric or Brenda the way that they have if they were to go on to win.
Right, but do you think that's a function of the result that actually happens, or is it, I guess my question is, do you think this could have been edited in such a way that Cochran's win and therefore the losses of everyone else is still in doubt at this point, or do you think that the events that transpired out there were such that you could just never edit Eric or Brenda or whoever else to make them look like they had a major role in the season?
I feel like, certainly with Eric, just because of the way he, point to the flag, that's the way he plays. The beef I have with the way this was edited, I guess, as far as lack of suspense, is Dawn's edit. I feel like, of course, if you edit Dawn even close to as she normally is, people are going to be rooting for her and expect her to win in the finals. And so if she does go on to lose, you kind of have to understand why. But at the same time, I feel like it's been kind of overkill in that department. I feel like we should have more reasons to believe Dawn would win. I feel like it's overwhelmingly Dawn's people aren't thrilled with her and she's crying all the time and whatever. I feel like Dawn, I feel like it should be a two-horse race, I guess.
Okay. Would you say something similar about Sherry? Because Sherry, I think, is someone who looks like she has a pretty secure spot in the Final Three right now, and who has also played what seems to me at least to be a pretty solid game. And yet, she's had these random confessionals where she says that she's in control or whatever, she only needs one or two more votes. And that causes some doubt to some extent, but we haven't seen any reasons why she would be a potential winner candidate. And I feel like they could have edited it in a way to make that more suspenseful.
Oh, definitely. I think at this point, of the players remaining, she would be the third most easy to paint as a potential winner heading into the finale, were she to make it to the finale, just because she was a fan. And if you give her some good confessionals where she knows what she's doing, she's visible and whatever, I could easily have certainly lingering doubt in my mind that, hey, Sherry could make it into the finals and get all the votes because people defaulting onto a fan or whatever. But again, just because of her edit, I just don't think that's even possible.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a situation at the moment where going into the finale next Sunday, pretty much everybody who, no matter how much attention you pay to Survivor editing or whatever, I feel like pretty much everybody knows that Cochran's got the thing in the bag. So for a lot of the audience, I imagine, why bother watching? Like, especially if you're not personally invested in the result of the season or how well Cochran does.
That's actually an interesting point, and it seems like once Malcolm went out, and given the way they're going to portray Dawn, it seems like if you're not a Cochran fan, this season really isn't for you. And I could see people tuning out for the finale.
Yeah, apparently the ratings plummeted to a serious low the episode after Malcolm got voted out. Like this whole 15 to 49 female demographic just deserted the show completely.
Yeah, I actually hadn't heard that about the show's ratings. I should keep checking more regularly. But that, I get it, because I feel like Survivor fans at this point, they're mostly the same people who have been watching for a long time. And I feel like most of those people are, like when we talked to Jim Rice, I remember him saying, you know, I don't really watch all the seasons. He's seen them. I'll DVR the first few. And if it doesn't get good early, I'll just stop watching. And I feel like Malcolm could have been what kept people watching. And now they're just not going to, like, story checks out in a big way that people are just done once Malcolm's gone.
Maybe their attitude, I think it's understandable, is that the people who have been watching since the beginning are going to continue to watch anyway. Like, no matter how much we all threaten to quit and stop watching, we know we're all going to be there showing up next season. And so therefore they have to pander to the people who, you know, maybe are going to watch something else if they don't like the first few episodes. And the way to do that, it seems to them at least, is to, because it seems like they've lost faith in the concept of the show, and so they have to make people interested in certain people on it rather than the show itself.
Right. Like, I feel like Shamar is totally a great example of that. It's, we know we're going to get our core however many viewers, and hey, these crazies might bring in some other people who just want to watch train wrecks, because that's really popular right now between, you know, whatever, Jersey Shore, Honey Boo Boo, what it, the list goes on. I feel like you're right, that it to me it signifies a total lost faith in what I think is a beautiful game and a great concept for a game that would always work, much like, I think, like the Alison Grodner era of Big Brother. She's like, well, the game is not enough. I need to make it crazy now, when the game is right. Very much enough.
And that's why even the people who are brought in as fan favorites, their characters, their personas get so whitewashed that it's hard for people who don't buy completely into it to appreciate them to the full extent anymore. Like, Malcolm, for instance, has been entered as the golden boy across two seasons, when reality, he seems like a nice guy, someone to be fun to hang out with. I think he's a bit more douchey than they portrayed him to be out there, and he's someone who could have been a good villain or a good anti-hero if they wanted him to be. But instead, he gets pigeonholed into this role of the guy we're all supposed to root for, and so, you know, when he leaves mid-season, there's nothing there to keep those people who are fans of him invested in the show anymore.
Right, it's they know they have us. They need to. They're trying to bring in the other eyeballs, and Malcolm's a way to do that. And bringing in these big characters is a way to do that. And of course, you know, when Malcolm goes, so go the people who were only watching for Malcolm, I suppose. Okay, so before we actually get to Reynolds' vote off, there's some interesting foreshadowing when everyone, you know, Andrea's just found that she stole the immunity idol from Eric. And now the talks of blindsides are happening, and it's not going to happen this round. We obviously know Reynolds is going to be the one who goes, but it's very, I was at least got me excited for the second half of the episode.
Yeah, we had the usual formula confessional about how, wouldn't it be really fun if somebody got blindsided? Like, we had the same thing from Corinne at the Merge, from Kat in one world. This is the kind of thing which happens all the time. And most of us are so attuned to this at this point that instantly, once we pick up on that, we pretty much know who's going home. I think the reason it didn't work as effectively, or, I mean, maybe it worked more effectively, as foreshadowing, is that given that there was this gap between that being said and the payoff in the form of this whole additional tribal council in there, this was, like, we kind of interpreted this as something which was going to be relevant more long term, so maybe at Final Six or Final Five instead, rather than immediately in the same episode.
Yeah, and this is actually where Andrea brings up that she wasn't a fan of how long Brenda stayed up there, and she doesn't like that, you know, she gets along with people and is good in challenges and is cute. I think that's what Andrea wants to be. It is, but I think she wants to be the only one. Yeah.
As much as we might want to, like, put that down to Jersey or whatever, I think there's a legitimate point that you made there, right? Because if you have certain qualities that enable you to play a certain part or do something particularly well, and somebody else shares all those same qualities, why not try and get them out of the game so that you can monopolize that role?
Right. It's kind of like why you would boot Shep or Brandon Hans if your goal is camera time.
Yeah, exactly. Although that's kind of like a more meta consideration, I think. But anyway, it seemed here like this is where the seeds of Andrew's downfall really start to get sown. Firstly, because of like the people she was proposing to be blindsided and the people she was floating these ideas with. And secondly, just the way in which she went about it and the timing. So, like, she did seem very eager to blindside Brenda, but it struck me that she was eager to blindside somebody and that person just happened to be Brenda, because now she had a convenient excuse to argue for that.
I feel like it's not so much she was like, oh, okay, I'm playing Survivor, I gotta get in a token blindside or whatever. I feel like it was overreaction or to the, something I feel like she almost not entirely made up. Like, there are reasons that one would want to vote out Brenda, especially when you're Andrea and you have an idol and Eddie in your back pocket. And if Brenda goes, your Final Six is looking a lot better, or Final Seven, whatever. But at the same time, I feel like it wasn't, it wasn't her doing it because she felt like she had to check off the blindside box. It was her kind of what we've seen all season, just being not frantic, but overplaying and trying to cover all of her bases from every angle. And as soon as she feels like anything might go wrong, she overcorrects. And I think that, I'm sure we'll talk about Andrea and her role in the season and what might have gone wrong. I feel like that might have been the number one thing.
Yeah, and maybe this wasn't like an accurate representation of how it went down, but it seemed like she was generally pushing for Brenda to be blindsided at this point when, I don't think anyone would have seen any reason not to vote out Reynolds this round. Like, even if you think Brenda is a serious threat and you want her gone, you can just do that next time. Like, there seems to be no benefit to anyone who isn't Eddie, who has no power hit, to keep Reynolds around. So why not just, present this as an idea to consider for when we get to that point, instead of something which has to be done immediately and which could potentially spook people.
Right, and that's the point. One would if approaching things optimally, but I feel like that's, again, it's what we've been talking about the whole time. It's Boston Rob PTSD, where she's trying, she doesn't want to get just absolutely owned.
It also makes it seem like a much more self-interested thing, right, where you say, I want Brenda gone now for these reasons, but all those reasons are naturally going to be superseded by the obvious facts that, well, Reynolds has no loyalty to anyone here and he's great in challenges. So, for her to be pushing for that now, when it clearly, no one else would go along with it, that has to start raising questions.
Right, and especially when you're at an even number, and as we all know, odd numbers are where are typically the inflection points in Survivor, certainly Final Seven in a season with a Final Three.
Right, the reason for that is, at eight, in order to have an absolute majority, you need five people. And so, in theory, you could just take out one of those five, and at Final Seven, those four would still be good to go. So you may as well knock out the fifth now if there's someone who served no other purpose for you.
Right, when they're not in the end game plans anyway, and leaving them in only could allow them to flip, potentially. Yeah. All right. So actually, one thing I want to get into before this, I can't believe this didn't make air, but it was a secret scene where Dawn approached Andrea before this Reynolds vote, where Dawn, is scared she's going to be the one who gets blindsided. This is something we've seen before, and just starts pouting her way into asking for Andrea's hidden immunity. I was just to hold on to it just for the round, just to make sure that nothing weird happens, and Andrea gives it to her.
Yeah, this whole scene, and not least the result, Andrea actually handing over Idol, the whole thing was just bizarre to me. If Dawn was doing this with the conscious intention of taking Andrea's Idol away from her so that she could backstab her later, which obviously isn't what she was doing, but if she were, Dawn would be this elite, god-tier Survivor gamer. This would be a fantastic move to be making. But as it is, it just reeks of insecurity, and I think, Andrea realized that, and this was just a move to assuage Dawn. It wasn't a case of Dawn, cunningly hoodwinking Andrea out of her idol or anything.
No, I agree, and while I would not ever give up my immunity idol to Dawn there in Andrea's spot, you're right. It's an interesting motivation here from Dawn, given that in asking for this on the grounds that she feels uncomfortable, she's also got to be sending the message to Andrea, hey, you might want to be feeling uncomfortable too here, because we can't, I know I'm not trustworthy and I don't trust any of you guys. And that's not necessarily the message you want to be sending.
Yeah. One of the recurring themes this episode was that people kind of laid everything out in the open at Tribal Council, which, I mean, again, Tribal Councils last for, 30 minutes or multiple hours sometimes. So we don't get to see everything. We only get to see the important things that are said. But to even be saying this stuff at all, there has to be reasons for it. I'm not sure what it is.
Right. I like it, by the way, first of all. I like it when people... Yeah. But it's
excellent.
Cool. Yeah, but for everyone, I mean, Cochran, Andrea, Dawn, all of them, they went through talking about, I've lied to some people. I'm currently lying to some people. I don't know who's lying to me or whatever, but this is a game, and that's just the way it goes. And I like this, and I feel like this is kind of... If possible, and I think it's very possible, the idea that if you're at Final Tribal Council again, this is where it comes into play, and this is a good time to be setting it up for that. If people view you as someone who was, hey, it's just I was just playing the game, like we talked about last week, how it's probably going to sting less to be burned by Malcolm than Dawn, because you expect it from Malcolm. And so when you can get people to kind of expect it from you, and then still be able to execute the move and whatever, I feel like that's it's only going to help. It's not going to hurt when you were up front the whole time.
One of the most underappreciated lines from this Tribal Council, I thought, was when I think Jeff Post was asking Andrew about what can be done with this opportunity or something, and Andrew said, oh, well, you can get out a Dawn or Cochran and Eric or Brenda. And I'm sitting there thinking, poor Sherry. What's she going to do to deserve this?
And then Jeff goes, or an Andrea.
Yeah, right. And Sherry's name just, like, never figured in the conversation at all. And you have to think, like, is it just because she's a fan and the expectation is that she's less dangerous than a favorite, or what? Like, this, I think this implicitly is suggesting to us why Sherry gets, you know, very few votes, or at least not enough votes to win if she makes it to the final tribal, just because no one seems to have any respect for her. She's not on anyone's radar, which is a good thing, but at the same time, you have to be on their radar to the extent that you actually, like, figure in their minds as a serious contender for the title.
Right, and I guess it's because we talk about Sherry as the strategic-minded player. From what I've seen as far as actions go, she's just wanted to be in the majority and hasn't really been mapping out an endgame. Granted, I think just being one fan against two favorites is a fine endgame for Sherry.
Well, she would have, I think, an excellent set of arguments to make if she does make it there. The question is whether people are going to be receptive to those arguments and give her a fair hearing, and I'm not inclined to think that they will be.
Right, and you know, when Andrea's running down the list of people that could get blindsided or whatever, and Sherry's not on that list, it kind of sends the message, like, she's not even worth blindsiding. Like, she's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, so let's get into, you know, Reynolds ends up inevitably getting voted out, and I really liked Reynolds. Let's talk a little bit about Reynolds before we move on, because, first of all, I imagine you have no disagreement whatsoever about booting Reynolds here.
No, it's easiest vote off of the season, probably.
Yeah, and Reynolds, someone I know you know, I've liked more than I think most people have liked, and all the way through when he was getting voted out, you know, he turns around to the group and is like, it's been a blast, guys. I can't wait to see what happens. And I love that out of people. Like, you know, he showed up, he played his ass off, and then he took it well at the end.
Yeah, depending on how the rest of the season plays out, this might be one of the least bitter juries. And if you're not a fan of the term bitter jury, then substitute it with whatever adjective you want. This is a jury with the most kind of calm mindset, I think, that we've had in a long while.
Oh, yeah. I think that, well, it's interesting because I don't know how Phillip's going to be as a juror. I could see him being something different. But again, you know, maybe based on his exit, he's like, well, I was outplayed and I'm going to vote for the deserving winner. I got, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But I think you're right, definitely.
I think Phillip is someone who wants to be seen to vote in a rational way and who thinks that he is. But his criteria for what deserving means might be wildly different from other people's.
Like RC?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So actually, let's see. One other thing on Reynolds before we close the book there. Is Reynolds going to be back? Do you see that happening?
I think he's someone that would be, like, at the top of the list for, you know, for that segment of typecasting. The trouble is, I'm just not sure when they're going to have the opportunity, because it seems like, for those of you who haven't heard the rumors about the format for the upcoming seasons, I don't want to spoil that for you, but it seems like Survivor continues to move to the point where there's going to be this emphasis on returnees, which you think would bode well for someone like Reynolds, who might not make it in if it's once every four seasons or whatever. But at the same time, like, what excuse are they going to find to bring him back, right? He's not someone who jumps off the page or someone who you need to bring back for a season to work.
No, but I feel like he's of the people of recent seasons that have only played once at least, only played once. I feel like he's got to be high. I feel like he brought a lot. Honestly, I feel like he was the entire fans' representation in Fans versus Favorites.
Right, but and that might be the role they want to bring him back to play, similar to the role that Eric seems to be playing this season. I don't think you bring Eric back if not for that tagline you can use. Like, first he was a fan, and now he was a favorite. Right? But
wait, really? No one pointed that out preseason.
The thing with Reynolds, though, is that there's no shortage of young, strong, athletic males that you can bring back to fill that role. And so I'm not sure why you choose Reynolds over any of the others. Maybe just because of recency bias? I don't know.
Yeah, that's mostly what I'm thinking.
Fair enough.
Right, but feel like he made a big impression and played, you know, he played hard and made good TV, and he was on recently, and I think people generally like him as a guy.
Yeah, that's certainly true. One of the things that struck me about the recent release in general is that we've said that they seem to want to bring them back because they want people that the audience are familiar with to act as like this anchor in case the rest of their casting doesn't go well, if that makes sense. But they're starting to bring back people from further and further back. Cause like on this season, you have Eric, who played 10 seasons ago. Corinne, who I don't think most people remember other than in some very vague sense. You know, in Philippines, you had Mike Scubin, who, okay, sure, he was one of the most iconic characters in the history of the franchise. But at the same time, I don't think most people would remember him from 23 seasons ago. So it's kind of at odds with maybe what we're saying, where they don't really give the audience enough credit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's partially that for sure. It's partially like we talked about with the first time we talked to Max, where they have CBS, you know, it costs them money to film a season of this, and when they get a great character like a Cochran, like a Phillip or whatever, it'd be almost foolish on their part not to bring them back and, you know, this developed personality that they don't have to pay, but that will draw in viewers, which I think makes sense. And also, I feel like they're trying to strike gold. Like, I think that was with Scoopin, that was with Russ Swan, where they're trying to find someone that the audience will latch onto that maybe, I'm sure the audience remembered the guy who fell in the fire. But I feel like all the returnees is trying to make more franchise characters and trying to find I think Parvati is a great, perhaps why they're doing this, where they take a risk bringing her back and then she becomes the superstar of the franchise. I think that's more along the lines of what they're doing.
It makes you wonder, like, if you picked out some medium tier characters from 12 seasons ago or whatever and just started them in a new season, how many people in a casual viewing audience remember who those people are? And if the answer is very few, then why not just keep doing that? Because on some level, you know these people can deliver, but you're not going to have that same antipathy towards returnees that maybe some of the audience is starting to get now.
Interesting. So bring back, like, Ian Rosenberger or whatever?
Yeah. How many people can remember who Ian Rosenberger is? Like, of the people who listen to podcasts like this, you know, close to 100%, of the people who just tune into Survivor once a week and don't bother with it beyond that, much less.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't know. I feel like that kind of would go against the fact that people know who these people are. They know who Cochran is. They remember him. They know who Malcolm is. They know who Phillip is. That's why they're doing it, is people will tune in sight unseen. They'll watch the start of the season, whereas if it's just new players, they might not tune in. Yeah, so let's get into this now. We're down to the final seven. It's Eddie and the six remaining members of Self R Us. And, you know, again, odd numbers are extremely critical. There's been a talk of blind sides going down. This is very exciting stuff. We get back to camp after Reynolds has been voted out, and more blindside discussion from Andrea, where, and this is, I feel like, a very good microcosm of Andrea's game, just like in a jar, which is she approaches I turned that phrase horribly, but she approaches Cochran, and says, her approach is, I want to blindside either Dawn or Brenda. And obviously this is a bit over the top, I would say, as far as, ambition thoughts, because I feel like this is spewing hard, just to be blunt, where it's sending the message to Cochran, on one hand, I do fully trust you. At the same time, I don't care who we're blindsiding. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to win.
Right, and you can see when Dawn's name is brought up, Cochran's expression, like, we've seen in the past, when Cochran's talking to people, he usually has this, not this poker face, because he clearly has this expression, but it's always the same expression where he just seemed kind of doubtful and hesitant. With this one, though, you can see he was genuinely blanching at the thought of having to vote off Dawn, and it was clear at that point that maybe it should have been clear to Andrew at that point that, you know, she should have backed out from this idea as fast as possible, and that she just pretended that she was maybe just throwing the name out there to see what he would say.
Right. Obviously a giant skill in Survivor is knowing your opponent. I feel like Andrea was just way off about Cochran's mentality and plans for the end game here. And that's exactly, you know, she got punished for it.
Yeah. Obviously it's good to be thinking about that at this stage. Like, because if you aren't thinking about it, then other people are going to be. But I feel like when you're having a conversation like this, firstly, just pick one name and stick to it.
Exactly.
Like, there's still a risk that you pick the wrong person and that person is someone that Cochran wants to be with or whatever. But at least you decrease that risk by half if you don't just start threading everyone's names around. Also, like, why not just, like, why even approach him with a suggestion? Like, why not just ask him, what are you thinking going forward for Final Seven?
Because that's what someone like Denise would do, that's what Kim Spradlin would do, and that's not what Andrea would do. And this is exactly why I'm so high on those two as players, Kim and Denise, because they react to what they're picking up from the people they're interacting with. And they, like, I don't, Denise would never make this mistake. She would understand Cochran would have no interest in probably blindsiding Dawn, and perhaps not blindsiding Brenda. They're the people who, like we've seen with Cochran doing this season, Corinne comes and approaches him. Andrea comes and approaches him. He just kind of reaffirms, understands what they're saying, and just aligns himself with their version of reality without making any kind of firm commitments. And this is the opposite of that. This is forcing your reality on him when he has no interest. Yeah.
But let's say you are intent on taking out Dawn. You don't even have to propose it as something which needs to happen now in our first conversation. Just say something to him like, you know, do you still think Dawn should be in our final three plans, or should we take her out early, or something like that? And see how he reacts to that. And if he if he responds in a way which makes you think he might be open to the idea, then, yeah, you can push it for now in some later date.
I played Boston Rob yet again. I don't know how many times I'm going to bring this up, but that idea of, hey, I'm going to go tell everyone exactly how to vote and they're going to do it, is not a reasonable thing for any mortal to be doing when they're playing Survivor. It's, you have to have an insane field draw and a ton of experience and skill that no one else in the history of the show has had.
In fairness, though, I don't think Andrew's just, like, running around on some tyrannical rampage trying to impose her will on everyone. I think she thought Colquhoun was closer to her than he ended up being and trusted him too much, and that ended up being a mistake. But, I think that's an easy mistake to make. It's a mistake which, hundreds of people have done before, a mistake which I don't think even the great players have avoided making in some of their appearances.
Still, I mean, even if she does trust him and thinks she's on board, Survivor is a game run exclusively through information. And when you're spouting out, I want to blindside someone, either Don or Brenda, I don't really care, you're giving Cochran a lot of stuff that he can work with against you down the line. And that's just not something, first of all, it's not a great approach in the first place. And at the same time, he doesn't even have to come back with a better approach himself. He's already got everything he needs from you. And as luck would have it, actually, Cochran immediately turns around and takes all of this information, both to Andrea, to Brenda and Don, about Andrea potentially wanting to blindside them. And this is where the counterstrike on Andrea really gets set into motion.
Yeah, and I was thrilled to see this from Cochran, because this is the first example we've seen, I think, of him not just being like this passive recipient of information, but him actively like using it to further his own interests. And the fact that he felt bold enough and confident enough to make this move at this point is, I was really happy to see that.
Do you think, because I feel like it's possible that he would say that, he would tell them that in the interest of full disclosure, even if he didn't want Andrea out. So do you feel like this was a ploy to further sell Andrea as a good boot, or was this just him being upfront with his allies?
That's a good question. I think the key factor in his decision to do that was the fact that it was Dawn's name who seemed to be on the docket there, because we don't know how close Cochran is to Brenda or how close she is with anybody else for that matter. But, I have to imagine that had Andrew just confined her pleas to trying to get Brenda out, that this might not have happened in the way that it did.
Right. I'm sure he would probably still tell Dawn and Brenda, hey, they're coming for you, but not for both of you. And and at the same time, this got me thinking, Cochran, once he sees Andrea do this and Dawn and Brenda's reaction and see this go through, in future rounds, I'm going to start lying about some, someone said that, it's what fair play to him.
Like, clearly they believe me about this, so why not, right?
Yeah, and they're the types that, like, the people that I'm saying came to me and said they want a blindside story would check out on that.
Right. I think maybe Cochran's in a position where he didn't particularly want to take out Andrew at that point, or take out Dawn or whoever else. I think he maybe might have gone along with some other plan that somebody might have proposed. But the way that Andrea put it to him, it was like he was being forced to choose between her and Dawn, and Dawn has been his closest ally since day one, so he has to vote out Andrew now, whereas maybe she might have stuck around in his plans till Final 5, Final 4, maybe even Final 3.
Right, especially when he knows she's got that idol. That is not something I'm interested in letting through to Final 6. Honestly, as soon as Reynolds gone and already knowing that Andrea has the idol, even if she hadn't come up and said she wanted to blindside Don and Brenda, I think this would still be the call as far as the choice boot here.
Right. That idol might actually have helped to be safe, even if she hadn't played it, because, for Cochran, we don't know how much his confidence has actually grown this season, but I can see him being reluctant to, like, make the risky move and vote off Andrea, where he could just say, well, she seems to trust me anyway. Why not just let until Final 5 after her idol tries, and then we can deal with it then when there's no variable in play there.
Yeah, that's definitely an idea, assuming it expires. Well, the problem is, if it expires at Final 5, then she's potentially one challenge away from screwing up your entire Final 3.
That's the question. Although, I have to wonder, do you think Andrew would actually beat Cochran?
Because
I was trying to count the votes in my head at it, and like, maybe it depends on who the third person is, but I think Cochran's still the favorite there, if by a much lesser margin.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible if Andrea and Cochran are both there that they split some, and then Dawn, if she's the third one, could end up, if it goes 3-2-2 or something.
Yeah, because from what you said, Andrea was very close with Malcolm, Reynolds, and Eddie, so I could see she would obviously get Eddie's vote. I could see her getting Reynolds' vote, maybe even Malcolm's as well, and then, depending on how everyone else gets ousted, maybe they see Cochran as responsible for that, or maybe he bombs his final tribal speech or something. And Andrea walks away the beneficiary. I don't know.
It's possible, and I'm now actually realizing there are 8 jurors this season, so it could go. I honestly feel like it's hard to say conclusively that any of the 3 of Cochran, Andrea, or Don would be a favorite in with the other eight people on the jury when you need five to win.
I think, given what we've seen, you can't conclusively say that Dawn wouldn't be the favorite, if that makes it easier.
Okay, that's definitely true, but I feel like that's more based on the result of, like, that's based on the edit, which is based on the result of the show. I feel like in real time, it'd be hard to, like, if it's a blind game and you just find out these are the final three and these are the jurors, I feel like it's a lot more up in the air. But maybe not. Who knows? All right. So as we touched on earlier, Eric won the personal immunity challenge this week, and we come back to camp now. This new alliance of five ends up getting together, and they decide they're going to split the vote between Andrea and Eddie, and everyone who's not named Andrea and Eddie, you know, everyone but those two is involved in this plan, which means that even if Andrea does play her idol, Eddie can at least be the one who goes on the revote. But it looks like everything's going to hinge because both sides, Andrea and Brenda and Cotton, you know, they all want Eric, and they all think Eric's going to be the one who's voting with them, and he gives a confessional about, oh, I'm the swing vote, whatever. And it's amazing to me. It's like Scoopin' and Lisa last year where, like, just not really doing too much is often finds you in some really interesting positions.
Yeah, it's weird. I think the Scoopin' comparison is perfect, actually, because I think Scoopin' received a similar lack of respect from the way he played in that role as I imagine Eric would if he made the finals. Because, you know, I think a lot of people have been trying to assess who it might be right for Cochran, who seems to be in control at this point, to take to the end with him. And I think if Eric managed to sneak in there, it wouldn't pose too much of a threat to Cochran because I'm not sure who would be voting for Eric at this point.
That's what I've been thinking about this whole, you know, we've decided Cochran's going to be the winner, and because we decided that, that's going to happen. But I feel like, I'm also feeling like a while ago I mentioned, I have Dawn definitely penciled into those finals too, and I've always thought that Dawn would have to win the final immunity challenge to make it to the finals, but it seems like Cochran really wants to take her there, and maybe it's because on Island she's, you know, maybe she's been a wreck and he's understanding that people aren't necessarily liking her, or not, or turned off by her, I guess I'll say, but I still feel like she's a really dangerous person to bring to the finals.
Right. Well, not necessarily, because, like, I think that danger, I think that always has to be weighing in the back of his mind, right? Like, if I knowingly take this super religious mother of six who everyone loves as a person who can do no wrong, and I lose to her, like, that's, like, I'm going to look back at that and think, what the fuck did I just do, right?
Right.
You know, that seems like a boneheaded mistake to make in retrospect, whereas if you take Eric or Sherry or whoever and you lose to them, well, at that point it just feels like there's nothing you could really have done. And so the impact of that decision is lessened. If you think about it, though, like, if we're assuming that Dawn isn't really a contender for getting a lot of votes, we seem to think the same thing about Sherry as well, and now Eric apparently isn't that well-respected. That puts Eddie and Brenda up there as potential jury threats just by default, if anything.
Well, jury threats in the sense that they're going to get more votes than the other people who would also lose.
Right, but that, like, jury threats, it doesn't really make sense to speak about it in absolute terms. It's only relevant in relative terms, right? So whether you can beat these other people who you might be up against. Like, does it make sense to say that JT is a bigger jury threat than Kim, for instance? Like, that's just not, that's not something you can really evaluate outside the context of that season's specific jury. And if you're evaluating it in that context, then it does seem like in this season, Brenda, despite what you might want to say about her, despite her lack of importance in the game, might actually be someone who Cochran needs to boot out, because if he does make it there, then she's more likely than these others to win.
That's definitely possible. And I think actually a good example is someone in JT you just brought up. I feel like Steven, generally speaking, would be very likely to get jury votes, but when he's relatively up against JT, he's going to lose 7-0, given that jury. Where it's, you know, it's again, it's just all relative. It's not about absolute terms. It's not like a Becky Lee situation where he's just getting no votes for that reason.
Yeah, and similarly with Eddie, obviously a lot of the audience sees him as a doofus, but I think people out there see him, firstly, as a lovable doofus, and secondly, as someone who, you know, has no blood on his hands, was free from, like, who was outside of all of the decisions that were made by the majority. If he makes it to the end, not only does he have, like, this unique set of arguments, he also has this great underdog story, right? Like, you know, I had my back up against the wall from day one, and I made it 39 days, and I'm here, you know, with a lot of my friends on the jury who might be willing to vote for me.
Oh, it's definitely, I mean, we've certainly seen the, all of my friends are on the jury and I somehow flipped my way here, work right out quite well before. But I, yeah, and you're right. I think Eddie, definitely people, I don't think anyone on the island doesn't like Eddie or like think he's fun. They may not all respect him enough to give him a vote, but I could definitely see him, at least, you know, I'm sure he would get like Reynolds or something where, and you know, maybe Andrea, where,
yeah, Andrea said in her Ponderosa video, actually, that she wanted Eddie to make it to the end. Whether or not that was, like, a personal thing and she wouldn't actually vote for him is another question. But, like, that's... Yeah, I don't think you can write him off as easily as some people have done.
No, I think it's just more for people who come from, like, our school of thought or our... I don't know. Where I would have a hard time voting for Eddie as much as I liked him in good conscience if he was up against the people that were actually dictating the entire scope of the game. And that's the whole... I feel like that could be Sherry's issue too. Not that people love Sherry or whatever, but that it's almost an insult to the other people who are actually doing things to say, well, that not worth my vote. I'm going to go to the guy who just fluked it.
Sure. I mean, given that Cochran does seem to have the freedom to move all these chess pieces around, is that why you think? I mean, assuming you do think this, I think it's an interesting question. Do you think that Eric and Brenda then might be the first two targets just because if you're thinking about who could sneak into the finals and disrupt his plans, they're more dangerous if they do that than somebody like Eric might be?
Right, and I guess, and actually along those same lines, I could see this being kind of why he wanted to get there with Dawn, where they were on the same tribe the whole time, they were always in an alliance, and he feels like he would have clearly demonstrated himself to be the more role-playing participant there, or half of the alliance there, and you're right, it's a big problem if you're the one who controls the game the entire time, is people who can make a distinct case that weren't just coattail riders.
I can buy that argument, but at the same time, in all of these exit interviews and secret scenes and stuff, it seems like people just don't see how close Cochran and Dawn are, and that's baffling to me, because they played on the same season together. Like, what closer bond could you have coming into the game, unless it's some kind of, like, you know, family thing or pre-existing relationship or whatever?
Well, unless they had this design play set up where Dawn was going to tell everyone that she could never fully trust Cochran because of what happened in South Pacific, and Cochran was going to say, oh, I know Dawn doesn't trust me or whatever, you know?
That's possible. If they did that, then that's fully to their credit, because that's a fantastic thing to do.
Right, but it's like these two played the same season, they kept in touch, they were in alliance before, they've been on the same tribe, they voted the same way every single round, they talk all the time. Yeah, it seems like people would start doing the math, but apparently not.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so let's see. Tribal Council, again, it's a lot of people talking about everyone's lying, everyone, you know, some people could be getting surprises, who knows. And then Andrea says to Probst, you know, she reveals that she has the idol, which everyone already knows about. And she says if she gets paranoid, she might play it, and she's prone to paranoia. But nonetheless, Andrea chooses to sit on her idol and ends up getting blindsided in a 3-2-2 vote. And this was – I thought it was kind of funny. Andrea, you know, once the second vote came on her, she was like, what? And knew what was about to happen. And then on her way out, she was like, oh, good, you know, good job, guys, good job. And I don't think she really meant it, but it was still an interesting exit nonetheless.
She took an exit with a lot of class, actually. And, you know, I didn't mind that in general when people do that. But I think, I think there's an exit contrast to be made between people like Andrea who understand the game enough and are big enough fans of the game that they don't want, like, whatever residual bitterness they have to end up, like, warping the outcome in a negative way. And self-proclaimed fans of whatever show they happen to be on, like, for example, Peter and Alec from Big Brother Canada, where they take their bitterness to such an extreme level that their desires, if they came to fruition, would just taint that jury and taint the show.
Right, like when Peter was casting his vote, he was saying he was casting his vote to prevent injustice or whatever.
And he's been saying recently that he formed this block of four votes in the jury house that was just not vote in accordance with Julian's vision, no matter what. So if the final two had been Talon and Emmett, then Emmett's the person Julian would have wanted to win, so they would have all voted for Talon.
No way.
That's what he's been saying. Maybe in the moment they'd have changed their minds, but the fact that you would even consider that or say that in an interview is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I agree. And I was actually really, really surprised out of both members of the Shield for a lot of things over the course of the season. But nonetheless, but I think you're right, which is, there definitely is a degree of, and I think Malcolm would fit this mold. I think you're right that Shep could fit this mold. I think Michael Snow would fit this mold of, I want to see the right person win. And for that reason, I think what we were talking about earlier, this being a non-bitter jury, I think that could absolutely be what we see.
I think also weighing in these people's minds, particularly because it's a season with returning players, is that, you know, the season is to some extent remembered by the person who won it. So if, in a flash of spite, you cast your vote for somebody who's quote-unquote undeserving, then the season becomes remembered for that, like the season which you were on. And more, you know, and in addition to that, like, that person becomes remembered as the person who beat you. So, like, you're saying, I wasn't even good enough to beat this person who I think is undeserving.
Right, and like in BB14, like if Frank ended up voting for Danielle over Dan, although from what I understand, he was going to switch his vote over to Dan. But
right, but that was a result of like extensive campaigning at the last minute by Brittany, like literally on the day of the jury vote.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. So Andrea goes out now, and we've already talked, I guess, about the strategic merits, which is I think we both very much like it. There was a lot that Andrea could have done to really disrupt Cochran and Dawn's game here, and I think, you know, of course, approaching it from their perspective here. Where do we want to even get into from here?
Not much. I mean, there was some stuff that happened between the challenge and tribal council that I think is talking about really. The first would be Eddie confusing adjectives for verbs, but that side of Eddie we can move past that. The second thing though was we see yet another conversation between Andrew and Cochran where Andrew is making this pitch to keep Eddie, and one of the things she says is Eddie's going to vote however we say. The trouble is though that I imagine Cochran has no reason to believe that Eddie's more loyal to him than he is to anyone else except Andrea. So when she says he's going to vote however we say, it becomes he's going to vote however I say, and that is basically becomes a confession that Eddie's tied to her and nobody else.
Right, again, it's like we've seen, all season out of Andrea, it's the right idea. I like that she's taking the initiative, but it's just the approach seems poorly thought out as far as what she's expecting Cochran to interpret, especially knowing Cochran, which I imagine she does, as like a kind of a paranoid guy or whatever. It just seems like she's not thinking through. She's always thinking that the person she's talking to is going to interpret what she's saying in the best possible light, when I think it's far more likely they're going to be erring on the side of how could this go wrong for me. So actually, this may sound weird, but I want to ask you, do you think this was actually the right move for swing vote Eric? Did he make the right call here?
It's kind of an odd question to ask, right? Because I'm not sure he – like, if he was the kind of guy who would think about it on the level that we would want to think about it, then – maybe the whole game goes completely differently. He wouldn't be in the spot in the first place, and so on. In the moment, though, like his philosophy seems to be, and it's been actually in secret scenes before, so it's clear that this is what it is. But I think he's putting this into practice here, where he's just going to vote off whoever the biggest threat is on the table every single round. And I guess if you don't have any other plan, that's not a bad rule to follow, right? Because you ensure that people who are big threats are in the game just get taken out, like by definition. And so I guess he assumed that Andrea, having this time with Eddie, having the idol, was a bigger threat than Brenda, who, you know, the arguments that Andrea was making about Brenda seem to be specific to Andrea. So, you know, she's good in the same type of challenges as I am. She's good at flirting with the guys in the same way that I am. Those aren't considerations for Eric, and so he really has no reason to want Brenda out, at least at this stage. So I can understand why, using that method, he would want to boot Andrea. The thing is, though, like, let's say he does make it to the end. He needs to be able to make a case for himself. I think a more articulate Eric who was thinking about it in this way could say something like, you know, I was a swing vote every single round. Everybody came to me for information for my vote. I was able to direct them, but I don't even appreciate it. I was able to stand back and challenge to the point where, despite winning, what was it, 3 or 4 in Micronesia, you never even considered me a physical threat. He would have an excellent case to make for himself. The problem is, though, getting people to believe that when their entire perception of him for this 39 days has been based on this idea that he's just not doing anything, right? I think the best way to overcome a hurdle would be to make one, like, singular big move, like flipping over with Andrew and Eddie. Maybe you don't do it permanently. Maybe you flip back and vote out one of the next round or something. But I think you need to do something to demonstrate that it's more than just talk, and I'm not sure if he's going to get another chance to do that.
Right, it depends, I think, entirely on his read on Andrea, which is, if I feel like Andrea, if I'm in Eric's spot, is actually going to be taking me and would use this idol that she stole from me for my own benefit, then yeah, I'm happy to vote out Brenda here. But when you're Eric and you know that she's had good relationships with all the other people left in the game the entire time, she has that idol that she didn't trust you to, or maybe he's not even thinking about it like that, but, and she also has Eddie, I have a hard time believing, even in the most optimistic sense, that she's definitely trying to get me into that final three there. And that's really what I'm trying to get people to take me, or I'm trying to win my way there. And I feel like if Andrea is not definitely taking me, then this would definitely be my call too.
Right. But the thing is, like, if he goes through with this, then I'm not sure he could shift the target to anybody else, right? It probably has to be Brenda.
Yeah.
So Brenda leaves at final seven. Then where does he go from there, I guess? Maybe he flips back and they split the vote between Andrew and Eddie at final six to play around the idol. And this is, of course, all assumed that immunities go the way he wants them to. So they split the vote there. One of them leaves. The other one leaves the final five. And then I guess you try and get Cochran out of the final four. But, I mean, it's tricky, right? Because Dawn's still there. Dawn's loyal to Cochran. I think you have to get Andrea and Cochran and probably Eddie out of the game at some point in order to win. And you only have, what, three or four slots to do that?
Yeah, that's part. I guess if thinking about taking out Brenda here in front of Eric, I'm trying to get a thing going where, you know, Andrea has the idol to use for our benefit. But I think it's the four of us remaining, me, Andrea, Eddie, and Sherry, against Cochran and Don at Final Six.
Okay, so then you wait for the idol to expire and go for Andrea after that?
Yeah.
So I guess you go for Cochran in Final Six, then, which might be easier now, because if Eric does flip, then Cochran and Dawn would just have voted for Andrea. So any tie that they might have had has probably now been dispelled. So then you'd vote out Cochran in Final Six, then I assume at Final Five, then Andrea still has her idol, and if it's viable through, then she plays it. So you have to go for Eddie, assuming he's not immune, and then at Final Four, go for Andrea, and end up with like Dawn and Sherry at the end, which seems to be fine for Eric, but it's that route to the end relies on a lot of things going exactly the way you need them to. Maybe any route that involves Eric winning also relies on very specific sets of circumstances, so that's not an argument against it, but even so.
I guess it's more like, if I'm Eric, I'm going to, whatever side I vote with on this, I'm going to flip on soon and then not get to the end with any of them, so I can say, this move, you all came to me, I made this move, and it put me in a position where I could then take you out and get my way to the finals. And I think that's like his only compelling argument, is he was the swing vote and then, you know, played it perfectly from there. So whatever side, if I'm Eric, whatever side I'm voting with here, I think those two are the people I'm going after. One of those two at Final Six, and then Andrea's going to idle the other one out, hopefully at Final Five, and then take out Eddie or Andrea or whoever. I'm not concerned about Eddie.
Yeah, this is all largely a hypothetical question because this isn't actually happening, we assume.
Yeah, and Eric also doesn't actually think about survivor strategy.
But it's an interesting thought experiment, if you like.
Yeah. So actually, what more do we want to be getting to? Let's start. Want to get into next time?
Yeah, specifically the next time on Survivor segment, which had me mortified, frankly, because we see Brenda committing the cardinal sin of this season of Survivor, which is trusting Dawn with information, and specifically going to Dawn and arguing that they should vote out Cochran, which I assume is not going to end well for her, and therefore not going to end well for me.
I can't wait. Yeah.
I bet you can't.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the preview is, oh, we should go for Cochran. Cochran, is Cochran in trouble? And as Stephen very, very rightly put it once, what happens in Next Time on Survivor stays in Next Time on Survivor. Cochran's going nowhere. Brenda's toast. One time. Let's go.
So I guess beyond that, though, how do you think this season playing out? Obviously, we both have Cochran as the winner, but how does he get there? Like, do you have any, like, idea of the margin by which he wins, do you think? And I guess, after the season, how are we going to view his win, in retrospect? Obviously, some of these are questions we're going to consider, you know, next week, and then when we recap the finale, but let's get into them now, briefly.
I think Cochran beats Dawn, and the third person doesn't get any votes, and I think he honestly beats her pretty handily.
Sure, yeah, I can agree with that. Probably like 7-2, 8-1.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere like
that. How do you think it gets there, though? Like, because clearly, you know, whoever the third person is, we agree that he wins. But those four people have to be lined up and knocked down in some order.
Right. I think one thing that stuck out to me was Brenda talking about how, okay, so my alliance is me, Don, Cochran, and then Sherry and Eric. And I feel like that's going to be the five that that Brenda and Eric are thinking about. And Cochran's going to really have room to maneuver from there. So he's going to get to go with Don down to the final five and then pick whichever of those three he sees easiest to beat, I think. And the other two are not going to be able to do anything about it.
Sure. So if you had to guess an order, what would it be, just out of interest?
I would say it is going to go Eddie, or Brenda. I hope Eddie wins the immunity, just to make sure Brenda goes next. No, I would guess it would go, I think Brenda's going to go next just because of her recent climb in edit status, where we now actually know who she is and what she's doing, and because of what we see in the Next Time on Survivor, where she's coming after Cochran. And I think Eddie has to be a priority after that. So I think it's either going to be against, I think, honestly, Sherry's probably the most likely one now.
Yeah. Okay. I can see it going like Brenda at 6, Eddie at 5, Eric at 4, which I think would be a great bookend to Eric's storyline, actually, over multiple seasons, right? Like, he gets to Final 5, gets up immunity, gets voted out, gets invited back because of that, makes it all the way to Final Four, and then gets clipped just short once again. I think that'd be quite cool, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it has to suck for Eric, but what can you do?
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not Eric. So, yeah. Fair enough. So anything else, actually, we want to be getting to today before we take off?
I guess, given that we all seem to agree on what the outcome is, how do you think we're going to feel about it in 9 days, I think it is now? It's fast approaching.
I honestly don't even know. Like, I've thought about it, and I'm going to, first of all, obviously have to see how this plays out. At the end, I don't feel like it's possible at this point for Cochran to be, like, cracking some top 10 winner rankings or anything just because of his table draw and how people kind of blew up around him. I don't think he would have done anything wrong. But at the same time, I'm going to be really, really happy for him, and of course. And I guess I'm mostly excited to see how it plays out. I'm sure he's going to get 20 confessionals per episode. And I don't know. The thing is, I was thinking about this the other day once we, basically established Cochran's going to be winning this season. It hadn't even crossed my mind until probably a week or two afterwards that he was also not only just going to get the title and have the knowledge that he played a good game, he's going to get $1 million.
Yeah, that's as far as I'm aware, he's pretty well off anyway, so it won't mean as much as it will to some people. But even so, like, nothing to complain about.
What's $1 million these days?
Yeah. I fully expect to be fist bumping the moment he's declared the winner. And, like, I don't think he's done anything which would conclusively prevent him being considered one of the all-time greats or anything. But at the same time, just given the way he seems to have coached through the season, I'm not sure there's anything to put him up there yet. Like, it kind of reminds me of judgments we made about Sophie immediately after South Pacific, where it's like, we're open to the idea that she could be a great player, but we just don't have enough. We don't have a body of evidence to base that on yet, right?
I feel like we have more evidence. Oh, sorry.
Although after this episode, there's a lot more evidence to put in that body. Like I was very impressed with the way he handled it, and yeah, I think the fact that it seemed like everyone left on the island is coming to him with information shows that he has positioned himself, whether consciously or unconsciously, he has positioned himself incredibly well, and that's a quality that we identify in people like, Kim or whoever, where it just seems like they're untouchable until they get to the finals. The only question is, are they going to win once they get there? And usually the question is usually the answer is yes.
Yeah, and I think the thing that stands out most to me is, like you said, everyone's coming up to him and giving him this information, signaling, of course, that they feel very, very comfortable with him. And I honestly think every single player left in the game feels comfortable with Cochran, as have the people that he's voted out before they knew that he was about to vote them out. And I think a very, very solid game, to say at least, and it could, go on from there. He's not going to be in the category by any means of, like, bad winners or undeserving winners to me.
Right, yeah, I'm just not. I think we have to reserve judgment until hopefully we get to talk to him again or talk to other people from the season and really work out what his role was. But in any case, it seems like we've made our finale predictions the week before the actual pre-finale episode. So I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll find something, I'm sure. But in any case, I think that about does it for today, unless you have anything else.
I don't.
All right, so we will see you. So today is the 4th as we're recording. Next episode of Survivor's on the 8th, which will be the penultimate episode. We'll try and get the recap of that up on the 9th or the 10th, so before the weekend there. And then we'll wait in anticipation for the finale, I guess. So we'll see you guys next week.